I admitted being surprised a few weeks ago when I learned that if I don't quote myself quoting myself, I'm committing plagiarism on myself. So for full disclosure, I have to tell you that this sermon is based on an article in the Fullerton Observer that led to an article in the Los Angeles News Group that led to a sermon at this church that led to a chapter in my book. Though this is not simply a craven attempt to sell books. It is a craven attempt to sell books, but not simply a craven attempt to sell books, which led to the chapter in the book, which led back to this sermon. And since I'm mainly going to be talking about ecology, this is proof that I walk the walk. And in fact, all clergy are the champions of recycling. We recycle sermons and jokes and observations and interpretations, and without recycling, just where would we be having to do this every week for, 45 years? So this comes from something that I really feel strongly about. The least helpful words, the least inspirational words in all of political, social, ecological discourse are, "It may already be too late." This is a clarion call to apathy, not to involvement. The bugle charges retreat, or at least taps. And there's no reason to get up, no reason to get involved, no reason to make an effort. Mike is absolutely right. Apocalyptic is about an uncovering, and it can be of disaster, or indeed, as the lines that he quoted from Martin Luther King, quoting Micah and quoting the book of Revelation, singular, it can also be a time that is peaceful and even paradise. That section that Mike quoted, where the mountains will be brought low, the valleys will be filled in, and the sea will be no more, what that's actually talking about is perfection. All the rough edges and the pits taken out of creation, and a smooth and perfect kind of spiritual, not physical, existence. Now, whether you believe in that or not, the poetic image of it is not hopelessness. It is about what can we do to smooth out the rough places, to fill in those valleys of despair. And one of the things that we, I suspect, should not do is say, it may already be too late. I met this first in the ecological movement in Berkeley in the 60s. When I arrived, I had very good friends tell me, in that kind of nice Berkeley way of the 60s, "We're doomed. If we don't learn to love our garbage, it's going to bury us, but we're not going to love it, and it's going to bury us, and..." Do you have some Fritos? And we're doomed. Then they switched to Cheetos and got on with it. I had very well-meaning friends who went on tours of ecological evangelism, except they weren't delivering good news. They were delivering despair, saying, "We're doomed. Everything is going to end. But please, please, repent first, because..." And I was talking to one of my friends who literally tied himself to lampposts, and he was very disappointed that nobody actually came to try to arrest him. This was the frustration of the 60s. "Please notice me." And he came back after one summer of, I guess, dis-evangelizing, and said that he was very upset. He was just very upset. People were not taking him seriously. He looked like Gypsy Boots. He looked like, that's a time reference for you younger people, of one of the kind of proto-hippie styles where he had long hair and a long beard and dressed really badly, even by 60 standards. And he said, people won't take me seriously because of my long hair and my beard. And I said, so shave your beard and cut your long hair. No, man, I got to have some integrity. Your integrity is more important than the planet you say you're trying to save. Let's try to put the values in line with the actions. But his message was continually dysphoric, and he didn't understand why he wasn't attracting a following. The ungospel that he was preaching was already too late. That the skies are going to be polluted and we're going to choke. That there is no source of power that we can use that's going to be good. Nuclear energy is a really bad thing and will get us killed. And this was before Chernobyl and Five Mile Island and Fukushima. So it's not that the Cassandras are wrong. It's just they're usually premature. And that the coal is no good because that will poison our lungs. And oil is no good. That will poison our lungs and cost us too much money to extract and to ship. So we need to have wind and solar. And, of course, today a lot of people in the ecology movement say, well, wind is no good because those fans make a lot of noise and they're ugly and they actually act like Cuisinarts and reduce the bird population to pate. So that's not a good thing. And solar takes up a lot of space and you can't store the energy efficiently yet. So I guess what we got to do is just sit in the dark and curse the darkness because there's no point in lighting a candle. It's all over for us. This has religious parallels in apocalyptics, in foreseeing a terrible future and damnation and hell and human beings as being the great unrepentant sinners. But at least with the religious apocalyptics, there's repentance, there's salvation. But with secular apocalyptics, it's, no, you're just going to die. That's not a heavily involving message, I found. And while somebody is saying the ice caps are melting, the seas are rising, the sky is falling, the most important issue is, and my back hurts, and I can't find a parking place, because the personal is so much more powerful than the universal when we're making these kinds of arguments and trying to get involvement. When you look at the polls of what are people's political priorities, ecology comes in after cable service. Just contemplate that for a moment. So the response has got to be, well, I guess they're right. Human beings being these terrible sinners, we're just doomed. It does make me miss Jonathan Edwards' famous sermon, Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God. One, because it's a really fun sermon, and because it's dramatic, and you are all going to hell, and there's nothing but the hand of God staying you from the flame, and you don't deserve your salvation. It's, you know, it's fine. But what a lot of my friends in the ecology movement is, and you don't deserve your salvation, and you won't get it, and you're just simply going to drown, and it's going to be ugly. And, you know, what's the point of getting up in the morning if it's all a done deal? That's such a negative message that doesn't involve us in doing the possible. It's true. And I get horribly depressed when I channel Woody Allen and I realize that someday the sun is going to nova. And someday the universe is not only drifting apart, it's accelerating. It can't wait to get out of the neighborhood and will fly off into nothingness. And I, you know, and what's the point of getting up and washing my face and brushing my teeth? Because that mortality thing for me, for you, for the world, just doesn't make it worthwhile. This is the most negative and destructive message we could possibly come up with. God, in the normal, regular, traditional sense, is far more hopeful and forgiving than apparently Mother Nature, who is cruel and unforgiving, and we've just already transgressed the line, and it is already too late. It is not too late. When we apply that it's too late, we can do it to every issue in front of us, not simply ecology, which is what I ran with this morning, but we can do it to the homeless. There's no reason for career-wise. People who are on the streets are there because they didn't study hard enough, they didn't work hard enough, they didn't have the right ambition, they were born with the wrong color and content of melanin, and we can't do anything about it because even psychologically the damage has been done. There's no point in reaching a hand out to help them because they are doomed and it is probably already too late. That is clear nonsense. It is clear nonsense. The world is just going to hell. Okay, what do we do to, if not stop it, slow it down? Our society is filled with anger and violence. What can we do personally not to be angry and violent and be carried away with that tide? We can, by choice, step away from the anger and violence. Our political system is completely and miserably corrupt, and not just in New Jersey. That's just a large attractive target, or a large unattractive target, depending on how you look at it. I lost him on one line, you know. 45 years, one line and you're gone. We have so many excuses we can use to do nothing. And mortality is one of them. But look at this day around us. Look at the people that are joined together in this sanctuary today. Look at the love that we search for. And I would actually change the lyric of the hymn to "There's more love somewhere." And let's make that love. There's more joy. Let's make that joy. Let's be a part not simply of searching, but of creating, of laying on hands, of opening up hearts. It is not already too late to make a difference in this world, in the lives of real people. That perfection will elude us in our great efforts is, of course, true. That our children and our grandchildren and our grandchildren's grandchildren will have to go back and revisit the efforts we made and revisit the victories that we won, because victories are never permanent. So, yes, I'm unhappy sometimes that I have to revisit evolution. I thought that was a done deal, that one got won sometime around 1929, but certainly by 1964. I'm unhappy that we have to revisit issues of war and peace, issues of woman's right to choose, issues of how to be gentle with this earth and our footprint on it. But that's also the good news, that the world is not finished, that there is a reason for us to be here, that it is not already too late, whatever your age, whatever your physical condition, there is something to be involved in to make this world just a little bit better. NPR this morning, they interviewed a gentleman who's 101 years old, and he's running for Congress. And this is, do you have the energy for this? Yes. 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 101. There's a difference we can make. It doesn't have to be grand and messianic. It doesn't have to be all or nothing. As our Unitarian kind of poet laureate, E.E. Cummings, said, he would rather teach a bird to sing than not teach 1,000 birds how not to dance. we deal with the small, with the personal. We can drown ourselves with how big the universe is, how out of control society is, how irremediable the great issues before us may be on that macro level. But on the micro level, our article of faith as Unitarian Universalists is that what we do and what we choose can make a difference, a good difference, in the lives of real people. We look for the clarion call to involvement, to action, to engagement, and to meaning. And whether you're an essentialist who believes that meaning in life is inherent, or an existentialist that believes that we create that meaning, both agree that what we do, what we choose, how we act, is going to either create or reveal that meaning within our lives. Our smiles, our hugs, our laughter, our tears, our embraces, our forgiveness, all make this a better world, worthy of paying attention to, worthy of celebrating. There's a hymn in our hymnal, I think it's number 6, that is, "As long as I have breath." As long as I have breath, I will say yes to life. I will say yes to you. I will say yes to love. Those are the most important affirmations that create and reveal the heart of why our hearts beat.